I think being called a very open person is really an undeserved compliment because, I don't find an openness here which I have achieved or which is any kind of special openness or one I have come to late in life or even early in life at any time in my life. Openness is just the datum, I think, that I find here. I'm open in spite of Douglas, I think. Not because of Douglas. I really mean that. Open in spite of him and not because of him. Open because one is mercifully and in the grace of God, one is built open. And I would respectfully suggest to all of us here that we are built open and not, our openness is not for achieving, it is for noticing. And it is wide, wide open and specklessly open, and so open it's unbelievable. All of us, without exception, are living from this, and I think if to be especially open, if there is such a thing as to be especially open, it's to just simply to notice that we are that way anyway, whether we notice it or not. and I would say, put another way, earlier Sweetie said about something about losing your head and finding your heart. Yes, but. It's not an achievement, it's not something we do, it's something we stop blocking. We admit to being open, we notice we're open. And I think, Alia, that's really what would be a good thing to look into tonight, wouldn't it? Our openness. And I certainly find myself at this time, shall I say, busted, wide open for you. And. I mean, that book on having no head is a rubbishy title, it's an absurd title. Here I am, having no head indeed, and here am I with what, 28 or 30 heads. All of them, without exception, take years off me. And so, I mean, it's not on having no head, it's on having a surfeit of head, a superabundance of heads, isn't it? Well, I mean, see, you surrender one meatball, decayed, and a meatball with windows, that's a funny one, a meatball with windows, you surrender that, and what do you get? You get, at this moment, I mean, what, 30, I wouldn't say meatball, but very delightful, I'd say delicious, delicious head, and a universe thrown in, actually, because what don't you get in your openness? And I find it just incredible that for the years, I don't know how long it was, that I was, I overlooked and denied and bunged up and blocked my openness with a block. And in America, I think you do have this term, I'll knock your block off, don't you? You have this expression. Well, block is a very good expression because it means two things. It means a block as in obstruction, and it means block as in head, I knock your block off. And God, or whoever she is, I mean, in her good grace and kindness, when I was around about 32, knocked my block off. Knocked my block off, and... I just found that, in fact, she didn't, of course, because there was nothing there to knock off. But as she knocked the image and the hallucination, knocked that off. And here I discovered that why I'm from about here, you see, I'm busted, wide open, and the stop here is a zip here, you see, and kind of, it's as though the moth had been at my rather decorative shirt. And finish it off here, you see, and above here, what the world, really. And I don't understand a word of it. I don't believe it, I don't think it, I just see it. And I said, well, how do I see it? I see it when in addition to looking that away, I look this away, and I notice that what you are contained in, or your lovely friends there are contained in this capacity here, that I'm full of you. That's just marvellous. I feel so fun, it removes fear, and I used to be incredibly screwed up, shy, like so many Englishmen, you know, we're terribly shy and morbidly self-conscious, I believe, even worse than most Englishmen. And now I find when God knocked my block off, I'm not so shy anymore. It's a bit nice.
5,000 people a year.
It's very nice to lose one's fear of people. But I don't hear really talk about benefits of it so much. I think we will touch on that, the practicalities of it. It seems to be extremely practical to live from the truth, if it is indeed the truth, and not from lies, if it is a lie that I'm blocked. Although it seems to me extremely practical to talk about those things, I'd like to address primarily, and at first anyway, the case. What is the case? What is the truth? Because it's not what pays off. That really pays off. It's the truth that sets us free, I find. What is the case? What is so? And with your permission, we shall do a few tests together to check whether what we're on about tonight is nonsense or true. And you, of course, how did I say this? You are the sole and final authority on what it's like right where you are, no distance from yourself, right where you are, what you're looking out of at this time. And you're the authority on that. And please, don't believe a thing I say, but test it. Test it. I'm going to ask questions and make suggestions and tell you what it's like here and all that. But it's not for believing. It's for testing and seeing whether you're in the same strange, hilarious condition as this one is. And I mean, some people say, well, this man's crazy, he hasn't got a head. And for years, well, when I noticed, after I noticed this, I didn't ever see anything above here except the universe. Well, it's quite something, isn't it, to have a universe mounted above here. I tried to share it with people, and I said, don't have a head. Some people rather worried. Some people thought I'm very profound. I'm talking in metaphors and symbols, and very, very deep one. And they couldn't penetrate what I said at all. And for 18 years, I just couldn't share it with anybody. I never for a moment thought I was wrong, of course. Eventually convinced I was right and all the world was wrong when they put a meatball on these shoulders. On these shoulders. I mean, obviously the other shoulders are well supplied, but this is a these shoulders lack this kind of stopper or bung or block. And for 18 years I went round trying to share this with people, and I failed. And then one day, my secretary was typing that on having no head, and she said, Takus, I get it. And by God, the change in her life, it's an astounding thing happened to Helen there. And it really was marvelous, in a few weeks in kind of ecstasy of having shared it with someone. And I thought, I can die now. I really had shared it with one person. But since then, well, it was a kind of two persons a year, and then four, and a bit of geometric stuff going on here. And, here we are tonight. And it's not set the Thames on fire. And it's not, it isn't in the, it isn't in the same level of popular acclaim. Crystals and channeling. It's just a joy to come here and share with you tonight. And so far from having difficulty in doing it, we have absolutely no doubt, thanks to the tools and devices we have here tonight, everyone, dare I say this, everyone will get it without fail. And if you don't like it, or wish to know that, I mean, that's fine by me, but you will get it. In order to reject it, you have to get it. And also, there's one thing I would say, that people say to me, oh, yes, well, Douglas, you don't really, you see, you can see this, but, I don't get it. And what they mean is that they don't get it, but they don't feel anything. You don't feel any better. See? Well, what we're on tonight, about tonight, I is not feeling any better, is it? In fact, sometimes, I mean, David and I used to say, perhaps we do say still, that, you know, in a way it might make you feel worse. Because when you find your heart, you find you can't wash your hands of other people's troubles, you know. When you find your heart, you find there's a price for finding your heart, isn't there? It's called compassion or something like that. So it's not a way of getting out of my troubles, I don't think. It's not a way of producing unmitigated and constant joy. It's just a way of living from the way we are instead of the way we're told we are, or the way we think we are, or the way we language and the whole world tells us we are, living from how we are. And I would say, whether you feel better or not is kind of secondary to this thing. I mean, let's have the enterprise and the dignity integrity to live from who we are and take what we get, rather than live from convenient, hopefully cheering lies. But of course they don't cheer us, they destroy us in the end, really, really. And living from the truth, I think, is, it is in the long run. I mean, all of us know it must be so, really, in our hearts, don't we? Living from the way we are has got to be more practical. In every way, it's got to be more practical. And so it's not, tonight is not a matter of feeling or belief or thinking, it's a matter of fact. Of course, you may say, well, if I don't feel any better, why should I bother? Well, I mean, you don't go into a laboratory and investigate the chemical composition of a substance in order to feel better, do you? You want to find out the truth of it. And I would say we ought to treat ourselves with the same respect as we treat a substance in a test tube here, and be as truthful as we can about the chap who's mucking about the test tube as well as what's in the test tube. Let's apply the same standards of honesty to the experimenter as what's in the test tube there in the laboratory. You know, there's no use lying, there's no use being truthful about this darn specimen in here, lying about this one here. I mean, let's have a bit of reciprocal truthfulness going on. Truth sets us free, and truth does not necessarily give us very nice feelings. But I would say underneath all, there is a peace, and there is something like a joy, I would say, when we dare to tell the truth. And such, I find there is something very deep there, which could be called joy, or peace, or satisfaction, or something like that, I think, when we live from the truth. However painful at times it might be, has got that one out of the way. And nor tonight are we going to have a mystical experience, not a peak experience.
Oh, damn.
Sorry about that. Well, I mean, it's perfectly permissible to have a peak experience here, but I think the only experience we really can offer here is a valley experience. And valleys are more comfortable to sit in a valley than well, you can go on sitting in a valley. You can always get in, you can always find yourself there, but the peaks are unattainable at certain times. I would say that this is really humbling and ordinary. I'm sure you all know that the Zen people say, it's like a glass of water, and it's just like that, plain as that. But Walter is remarkable stuff. He goes to the lowest point, and in the Tao Te Ching, it says, draw on this well. You know, the well, which is the Tao, is like water, it seeks the lowest place. It never runs dry, and it never lets you down. Well, I think this water, this clarity, whatever you like to call it, is refreshing, and it doesn't let you down. It's always available. And all we have to do, in order to find it, all we have to do is to turn the arrow of our attention round from what we're looking at to what we're looking out of, and just be enterprising enough to look in both directions instead of one direction. And tonight, I think we should, it depends how long Elio feels we could go on. We're trying to fit in some questions, that'd be nice. And we must address ourselves to, for a little while, as to how we keep us going and what value it is in our lives, I think. But above all, we have one or two experiments to make up our minds about the truth here. We bought some gadgetry, and bought it at great pain and suffering to my right arm from England. Gadgetry here, technology. I mean, we come to California, we come to a place where tools and technology and stuff are hopefully acceptable. So we have some tools for the job here. And the purpose of the tools is simply to direct our attention to this, what shall I say, truth I've been talking about, this openness that we don't achieve, but the openness that we are, the openness we're looking out of. And how could I sum up, before we do the test, what is the essence of the finding that we may make, that I've made certainly, and that we would expect to make or hope to make? Well, is it, in its simplest terms, what we're up to tonight? And what mistake are we seeking to correct, if there's indeed a mistake in our lives about these matters? And the mistake which we're about to look at and correct, if we can, it seems to me it could be put very simply, and that one isn't what one looks like. I promise you, I'm not what I look like. Now, you've got what I look like, and by look like, I mean look like over there, at a distance. Now, you've got what Douglas looks like, and that's your problem. And I've got what I am, and they're not the same. But not only are they dissimilar, but I find in every respect they're the opposite of one another. Now, if indeed it's true that you find also that what you look like is the opposite of what you are, and if, like me, by language and by parents and teachers and every darn person, you've been sold the idea that you are what you look like. You are exact. You are where you are, what you look like to people over there. Why then, really, this is an extraordinary thing, that we should take the world's judgment on this, should believe it, we should live our lives under the impression that we are what we look like. And our experiments will be addressed to this correction of this view. I'm not what I look like. You've got what I look like over there. I've got what I am here, and they're totally different. And the extraordinary thing is that the human condition, price of admission, the human club, I find, is a heavy subscription, it's a tremendous subscription. And what is it that I believe? I mean, just go cuckoo, as we say. I believe that I am here, what I see in the mirror, what I look like to other people. Now, I'm not talking spiritually, I'm not talking spuddle, I'm not talking psychologically. I'm not talking metaphysically. I'm talking common or garden terms, in terms of whiskers and teeth and eyes. That childlike stuff. I'm not being subtle here, I'm being very very common, talking in ordinary terms. Ordinary time, talking in terms of beards and moustaches and noses, eyes and that kind of stuff. Why? Well, because I like to start with what's simple and what's basic. I was an architect once, and I discovered something which I think you know about in these regions, that foundations matter. And if the foundation is wrong, the superstructure is in danger. And if the foundation is strong and good, the superstructure has got a good chance of surviving, and so on. And I think we are very good at superstructure work. I mean, we are a bit apt in neglect foundations. And the foundations are simple. They're very basic and very childlike. Investigation is enough to establish firm foundations. And so we are looking to the foundation of our life tonight. And I would put in a plea for, no, I don't think I need to in this distinguished company, but I think I would put in a plea for curiosity about who we really are. You know, there's a doubt about who we really are, because the mystics have said we're not what we is, we think we are. And the great ones down the ages have talked about the possibility that we are exactly the opposite of what we've taken ourselves to be. I mean, great ones down the ages have said that really, really, who you are is not a product of the world, it is the origin of the world. I mean, embarrassingly, what should I say, pretentious thing, but the great ones have said it, that who you really are is not a product of the world, it's not a passing phenomenon, but it is where everything comes from. And our curiosity tonight, apart from the practicality of the matter, I mean, you know, we've happened. Gosh, it's a thing we're not very thankful for, is it? We've happened. We actually occurred. You know, one needn't have done, need one? Need you occurred? And having occurred, it seems to me so sad thing, Elliot. You know, sad thing. Go on. And live and die without ever having a good old look at it, at what's happened. And before we unhappen, let's have a good old look at what's happened. And don't take anyone's word for it. Don't take Douglas's word for it. Because I know if Douglas told me, you know, you get taken in by language and friends and teachers, what's the use of then coming along and believing old Douglas? I mean, I would say question everything I say, because test it, test it, test it, test it.